problem with just missing the podcast or the puppet on the internet. We have a fantastic guest for you today and a fantastic episode, so tune in. A few weeks ago, some black people on a podcast called Open Chats said some very, 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 very racist things about coloured South Africans. They said all coloured people are crazy, which is itself crazy, thereby undermining their own racist stereotype. The problem is Open Chats is a very big podcast with huge reach, but they don't seem to have any fact checkers. Not even their own brains are doing fact checking. In fact, if they did any less fact checking, the DA would quote them as official statistics. Now, political leader and self-declared president of coloured people, Gayton McKenzie, spoke out on the racism until we found out he was actually even more racist, including saying the K-word in some tweets. It was like complaining about the farts right after you yourself took a cuck in the lounge. To explain it all, I have someone who writes and thinks about the politics of identity and a friend of the podcast. It's Dylan Valley. Hey, Dylan, how's it going?
Hey, Chester. Thank you for having me back, man. Like, yeah, it's a real honor to be a return guest. So
it's great. I'm excited to have you back. You nailed it last time, so it's gonna the guys are gonna love you on the interwebs. Listen,
thank you,
Dylan. What do you think about this whole Open Chats, Gayton, racism, scandal, cuck thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, obviously what they said was really offensive. I think that they shouldn't have said what they said. But I think at the same time, they're young kids. They have a podcast. I think we should use it, you know, as an opportunity for learning. And instead of, like, you know, going after these guys, like, litigating and wanting to, like, as Gayton McKenzie says, he wants to finish them. And I think that's not the way to go. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I also think what they said was obviously really wrong, and it's like wrong for many reasons, right? So which we'll get into, I'm sure.
I think we should cancel them. Just throw them in jail forever. Just throw them in jail with Julius or Gates, because the politicians aren't helping. The politicians seem to love racism because it's a great way to get followers.
Yeah, I mean, politicians use these kinds of moments, especially like when you have these kind of like populist and like fake populist politicians, they use division to get votes. So this is why Gayton McKenzie, for example, he is really kind of pushing himself out as like the defender of all colored people, as the voice of all colored people and all of this kind of thing. But it's a political move. It's a strategy for him. There's nothing altruistic about it. And so we shouldn't be following the rage that he's engaging in, because that's just fuels his own career and it fuels more clicks and likes on the internet. It doesn't really get us anywhere.
No, because Gayton does walk around acting like he's the traditional leader of colored people unappointed. The way he acts is like when colored people die, he's the one who welcomes them into heaven.
I would hate that if I died tomorrow.
Imagine
that,
Gayton. Welcome to heaven, Dylan.
Yeah, please don't put that in my mind. Like, I'm even more scared of death now.
Good luck with that. Please don't let me die. So Gayton isn't there. Let's start at the basics. Okay, why is it racist to say inbreeding is a colored thing? What do you think? Explain for people who have no idea. What are the dynamics of that?
So, you know, like colored people have this very difficult history to talk about at times. There's also this idea of colored people as mixed, you know, people. But even that is problematic because that assumes that everyone else is not mixed in some way. And it basically buys into this idea of racial purity, that you have like a pure white person,
right?
And specifically, it helps white supremacy, this idea of people mixing who shouldn't have been mixing and that kind of thing. Out of this kind of thing of like slavery and also, you know, sexual assault, rape of enslaved people, but also intermarrying before apartheid. This is how, you know, the kind of mixing in South Africa came about. Before apartheid and before even the colonial era, before the Dutch settled here, Cape Town was already a port city. People were coming and going. We spoke last about a little bit about the history, like Harry the Strandlooper, for example.
That's right.
He was a diplomat. He had been around before the Jan van Riebeck settled here. So, but as a result of trying to keep people in their place to promote white supremacy, you get categorization of people. And because colored people are seen to have, you know, because colored people have had, some of us have white ancestry. So there's this idea that people who are mixed are closer to whiteness.
Right.
So this is where these ideas around coloredness come from. Also, to keep you in your place, they'll say things like, oh, these are loose people, these are like dirty people, these are whatever, so that you know that you can never attain your like a higher status in society. But also, and even more damaging, is that this whole idea of colored people also places people above what is seen to be black people in South Africa. Even though, if you look at the slaves in the Cape, the slaves that came to the Cape, 60% of those slaves were Africans, right? So we often think about them as Asians. We say like the Malay slaves that came. Yes, there was a huge group. Also Indians, like probably even bigger than the Malay population or the Indonesian population that came. So, but Africans made up 62% of the slaves in the Cape, who became part of this, you know, colored community. So like most of us have African ancestry. If you actually do the research into your own heritage, you'll find that as a colored person. So anti-coloredness is also a form of anti-blackness, right? So it's, we have to acknowledge that these things all operate, you know, for the same, towards the same goals, which is white supremacy at the end of the day.
Wow, that was a happy answer. Comedy podcast, Dylan. That was the most depressing, but it's not depressing. It's interesting. It's a joyful a mixing. But I think what I really grabbed onto there was the idea that we see mixing as impure, like it's less than, that somehow that white South Africans aren't just as mixed. Because let's be honest, white South Africans were mixing with people of color for a very long time before suddenly apartheid arrived. So this idea, there are a lot of Afrikaans people, my goodness, Gerry, you're a bit more tanned than Hitler had in mind. So this idea, and the same goes for black people. We're going, no, I'm black. Are you sure about that? What does that mean? Like, because we know that, you know, people from Central Africa arrived in South Africa and mixed with who was here, which was Khoi and San and Nam people. So there were white people who mixed, and suddenly now Xhosa people have all sorts of ancestry or in Asian ancestry. So in some ways, we're all colored.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's why...
That's kind of crazy. Yeah. I'm out.
We're done.
Not in that way.
Yeah, but it's true. Like, we're all mixed in some ways, right? Like, we're all mixed in some ways. There's no... This idea of racial purity, it doesn't exist. Race in itself is an idea. It's a construct. When we talk about white people, even white and black, those are ideas. The term white only came about like in the 1600s. This writer, Emma Dabiri, says it was in the West Indies, ironically, that this term came about, like during slavery there, that people were trying to distinguish the Irish, the like kind of like the indentured laborers who were the Irish from like the black
laborers. Wait, just slow down a little bit. Are you saying that they sent Irish people to the West Indies,
like Jamaica, those places, Barbados.
To the Caribbean. They sent Irish people there as sort of like semi-slaves, indentured labor, and then they needed to differentiate between this kind of slaves and those kind of slaves.
Yeah, so they
How
were like,
cuck
you.
Who were these people?
They were pretty cuck.
It's the English. It's the English.
I mean, that was the
you
English.
You scumbag, racist bastards, even the Irish. Okay, so they need to differentiate between brown slaves and white slaves, effectively.
Effectively, although the Irish were not necessarily slaves, they were indentured laborers, which is a little bit different, but also not good.
Not actual slaves, but not good either.
Yeah, but it's also, talking about the British, I saw your... posts on, I think it was a YouTube short, because I'm following you, by the way.
Thank you. I follow you too, I think. I hope so. Am I following him? You are. Okay, good.
So you were talking about how white people also have a role to play in this kind of latest scandal, race scandal online. And it's true with, you know, like the British were the first to kind of introduce colored as a categorization. It only became law later on during apartheid, as a racial categorization with the Group Areas Act and the Population Registration Act. That's as recent as the 1950s, so it's not even 100 years ago. Before that, the British did bring it into the Cape Colony, but it was a little bit looser. It wasn't kind of as defined.
What did they mean?
It was to define anybody that didn't fit into like neatly this binary of black and white. So if you were... You know, if you were like Asian in some way, if you were mixed in some way, like putting mixed in quotations here, or if you had all these kind of things, you were lumped into this group of color. It's just a way of saying someone who's of color or like a person of color.
Right.
Again, this is white supremacist logic kind of saying that these people don't have color. They're white. They're clean. There's nothing, you know, there's like no color to them, which is, you know, it's totally
it's madness.
Bullshit. Yeah.
No one, everyone has a color. Look at me. I'm pink. Pink's a color.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fizzer. I'm my race, if anything, is fizzer. Listen.
I would say peach. I think you're more like a peach.
A peach. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
a peach. It's yeah. just Chester and the giant peach. Peach sounds like another word for vagina. So I feel sexualized right now, Dylan Valley. Oh, yeah. You're pressing the white hand in my ass. Listen, I mean, that is the thing. There's white people watched colored and black people fighting each other on the internet. And they were thinking, thank goodness, for once we're not involved. It's like watching the exes you cheated on fight each other. But we are involved, aren't we? Because we benefit from the racism that's happening here at some level.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, the colored was used as a way, like the idea of what a colored is or what it means was used as a way to buffer between the black majority in South Africa and the white minority, and to break up this kind of this group of people that, you know, like, and also put the people couldn't neatly be defined as black into certain group, but also, again, like I said, you know, in a very sinister way, then gave colored people more rights during apartheid than black people, which is why there's still certain levels of animosity between black people categorized as black and people categorized as colored, or colored people and black people. And also the term colored has come to mean different things for different people. But yeah, but it becomes awkward for people to then claim coloredness, because there's in some instances an assumed sense of buying into a racial hierarchy, like this classification of you're slightly better than us, and that's why you want to be called colored. A lot of people self-identify as colored because that's the community that they come from and that's what they know. And so it's you can't really, you know, cancel people based on that, or hate people based on, or call people racist just because they call themselves colored. But it does put you in an awkward place, because there's a anti-blackness even within that categorization in itself. But we have to reimagine these things. We have to somehow find ways of moving beyond the old understandings of these words.
This is what I'm wondering about. You see, if colored is a term that was initially invented by racist white people to describe a very diverse group of people, why would we still use it?
I think we use it now because people have an affinity to it. They grow up in communities where there's like culture and language. Like we spoke about cops last time, for example,
yeah.
right? So to deny people the sense of who they are, to say like, oh, colored doesn't exist. At the same time, black doesn't exist in the real world, so to speak, right? Or in our biologies as black people, but it's an idea. So, and you can be,
right.
I think we have to accept you can be both black and colored. We have to accept that coloredness.
Don't tell Gayton, he'll write that one to death. No.
He is.
It's okay, I can say the K word. I'm black and colored.
Well, he's already using it. He's already saying it. So, like, but I mean, it's you know, color, being colored is just a part of being black. It's an iteration of being black. And I think that's, we had an opportunity, I think, in 94 to, you know, break away from this idea. And now people also like trying to reinvent the word. You have people like Patrick Millet, who wrote The Lie of 1652, which is like a really great book. I recommend everybody read it.
I'll read it. The Lie of 1652. I'll definitely
read
it. We spoke about it last time as well. It's great.
Yeah, and he writes, he's trying to reimagine terms for colored people, like, for example, saying you're a Kamisa African. And Kamisa was the name of a river that flowed through the city, where the city is now.
Oh, wow.
And so, or it's...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's like a place of sweet waters was the name of Kamisa. That was what Cape Town was called by indigenous people. So
sweet waters.
Yeah.
Oh, so, nice.
So
that's
like,
a nice name.
So trying
the Coca-Cola
to...
of its day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why we were the first refreshment station, right?
That's right.
In the Cape.
We got your sweet waters, baby.
So, yeah. So, you know, we could reimagine the words. We could come up with new words. I think there was a real opportunity in 1994 to do it when we came into democracy. We didn't do it then. now I feel like it's a bit too late to do away with the word. There's so much culture attached to that word that you can't just like wish it away. Like you saw with Tyler, for example, who went to
America. Americans say you can't say colored, and we're going, but you don't know our culture, so futsek.
Yeah, that's her lived experience as a young woman who comes from a particular community where that's how people refer to themselves as colored people. So you can't blame her for that. That's like, it's even in law, we're like legally still like this kind of thing. So you can't blame Tyler for that. But I think maybe as a result of this kind of, maybe as part of the national dialogue, we should bring up this the idea of like being colored. And also, like, even if it is just to reimagine it as part of a global black experience, because that's also how many of us see ourselves. And that's there's also so little difference between us in terms of like the black community and the colored community. You know, often it's just language.
Yeah.
But in our genetics and everything, the walls between us are so, you know, they're very flimsy, like very porous.
That's so true.
Yeah. So I think that is a possible way forward. Yeah.
Listen, man, you know, I think it's some of the problem with these kids in this open chat, and Gaten clearly doesn't understand this himself, is the effect of stereotypes on people's lives. I mean, this whole when they said, oh no, it's colored people who sleep with their cousins. I myself was shocked, because as far as stereotypes go, I thought that was white people's thing, sleeping with your cousins. I thought that was the white people's stereotype, the Boxburg thing. In fact, I felt it was racist because it was cultural appropriation. I thought they were stealing something from white people, ironically, that it would go in that direction. But what is the real impact? Because some stereotypes sound cool, like, oh, we got bigger ding-dongs, or we're better at swimming. But all of these things reinforce some idea of that if you're a race, that means we can know you even though we don't know you. What is the impact on people's lives?
Well, that's the thing about stereotypes, is that it takes like a few things that you can see about somebody, right? And then it reduces you, like in your whole being, like your whole complexity, to just that one thing.
Yeah.
So then you become a colored instead of like you as an individual, and then all the things that are attached to that, all the stories that are attached to that. Then the problem with stereotypes is as they get repeated over time, they become in people's minds, they kind of tend to stick in people's minds.
Yeah. Right?
And then it can really impact your chances of like, say, employment, or like when you're dating somebody, or who you get to, you know, meet, or like, you know, those kinds of things. What spaces you feel comfortable in because of these stereotypes, right? Like the colored gangster stereotype, for example, still very prevalent in film and TV in South Africa, even in like some of like the newest shows that are coming out now with high budgets. So those are the kinds of things that really impact people's lives. Like we were talking before the show about the idea of colored people being loose sexually and this kind of thing, which it comes obviously from like a colonial era. And so that can be dangerous for like young women, for example, you know, like who are out and about, like socializing, you know. And so it's like all of these things have
gender-based violence, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so like all of these things have real-world implications. So we have to confront it as it comes out. And it's good that people have confronted open chats about it. And I think that they're probably like not going to be engaging this kind of thing in the future.
No, because they lost their DSTV sponsorship. They're in so much cuck. They're going to have to change their name to slightly less open chats.
Yeah, the close
chats.
They
are in so much cuck. If they're any more, they were in any more cuck, the MK would appoint them as their Secretary General. Listen, you know, post-apartheid, we've dropped the idea of non-racialism, become a lot more racial. People seem to be more Indian, more colored, more Zulu, more Afrikaner refugee. Why is that?
Well, I think that, you know, what happens, you know, in a democracy, if you don't address these kind of divisions and you're living in a very unequal society, like we're the most unequal society in the world, our economy is not growing, there's corruption in government, and you haven't addressed these like structural inequalities and also psychological inequalities, people start to feel like, oh, my group is the most affected by all this, or like my group is the most aggrieved. And actually, politicians then can use that to kind of, you know, get your vote and say, like Chester, for all the white puppets out there, like nobody's looking after you guys.
White puppets having the best time. Ask John Stiernason. He literally got into the White House to hang out with an orange puppet. It was just puppet on puppet violence. White puppets are doing fine. Thanks, Dylan.
Okay, good. So you guys are fine.
Doing fine. White puppets are everywhere. Ask AfriForum. They are looking after white puppets and another. There's actually a word for a stupid white puppet. It's Anne's roots. There, boom, I'm out. I understand what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense. How do we get rid of this? Because, you know, I do know a lot of coloured South Africans, and I have noticed there is a fair amount of anti-black racism there. Like, coloured families are talking about their German ancestors. We are the Germans. That's Germans with a tan. As opposed to their Xhosa ancestors. How do we fight that?
I think it's through dialogues like this, right? Like, we got to start talking. We got to start talking really early on, so work with kids at a young age, at like primary school level, to kind of really talk about our history, like where do all these ideas come from? Where do these racist ideas come from? Why is it that the person who cleans your house is black, and everyone else you know only has black kind of labor, and why is the head of the boardroom white? Like, why are those inequalities there? So we have to start with talking through these kinds of things, and also understanding that there are going to be people who are going to stoke these differences because it works for them, because at the end of the day, they get traction through that. Even
Gayton, just saying. Gayton, I'm talking about you bastard, thieving, conniving, and sometimes the white supremacists, the Steve Hoffmeyers and so on, everybody jumps on this racist steam train when they can.
Exactly. So like Ronaldo Jose, even, you know, for example, or you know, like even you know, when you went to when Ramaphosa and Stiernaise and all them went to the Union buildings, why was Johann Rupert there? Why were these white golfers there?
Oh, you mean
why
the White House? They were in the Union buildings. That would be a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Sorry, the White House, the Oval Office.
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure if the Union buildings aren't also the White House, because we all know who runs the Union buildings, Johann Rupert.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so why is it the case? Why is Johann Rupert some kind of genius? Did he figure out something to progress humanity for, and thus was rewarded with all of his riches? Or were there structural things that helped him along the way, right? So like these are the kinds of questions we have to have. Also about these categorizations of colored and black. And I think the reason why this has become like a huge talking point is because the whole idea of coloredness highlights the way that in which race is this social construct and just an idea. And that's why it triggers so many people, because it's so obviously like a social construct, and it's so in your face how race is not meant to be like this fixed thing in our minds. And so we want to hold on to like these fixed categories. And I think we should just get more comfortable talking about these things and not identify so closely with it. We need to, I think there's a Biko quote, which was actually in a book called Colored by Tessa Dooms and another journalist.
Yeah.
Lindsay
Chattel.
Yeah, yeah.
Friends of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Amazing
people.
Journalist.
Lindsay Chattel, yeah. And they have a Biko quote in there, which is like, if we want to actually like address people's, in a human way, if we want to address people's humanity, we need to foreground the humanity instead of their racial classification, right?
I love that. Yeah. That is genius. We're people first and a race second. Yeah, listen to that, Gayton. Listen, man, what should we do to stand up to these politicians who want to divide us instead of bringing us together, who want to throw fuel on racial essentialism, this idea that you are your race, as opposed to just being a feature of your identity? How do we deal with these bastards?
Well, I think we need to build community. We need to listen to communities as well. So, like, when people are talking about the communities or when people are having certain grievances, we should listen to them. We should listen to people. We should also start to embrace this kind of class solidarity and see that people, like you had Lester on last time, we had these like really amazing conversation. Also, the statistics he was talking about the inequality in South Africa and how, like, if you earn more than 10,000 rand, you're like, you know, there's a really small...
You're in the top 8% is what he said.
Yeah, in the
if
top
8%. If you earn a 10,000 rand or more, you're in the top 8% of earners in South Africa. That is insane.
Yeah, so we need to realize, like, this is a terrible situation, and this cuts across class, and it cuts across race, should I say. It's a class issue. And what the politicians are doing is dividing us, like using these racial classifications from apartheid to divide us and fight, when actually what we should be doing is challenging, you know, like, why is the economy not growing? Why are we not having massive social upliftment of, you know, the majority of South Africans who live, you know, in serious poverty, under the breadline? So, like, those kinds of things cut across black and colored communities. And, like, those are where we see our shared struggles, those are places to start connecting. Because,
but look, man, you know, I wish that South Africans could see it like this, but clearly what's going on with Gayton McKenzie and co. is that they're people who have been neglected. They're people who have been left out in the cold, who are not being included in the system. That doesn't mean it's okay. Like, you know, look how Donald Trump won in America by telling poor white people, no, I'm your guy, even though they're still privileged compared to people of color in America. So they just needed someone to help them racistly. And I'm not sure if... You see, what I'm trying to say is this, is that, you know, the class struggle, you know, helping poor people who are of color who are struggling, or poor people of whatever race who are struggling, is going to get jumped on. And look at how we treat people who are foreigners in South Africa. Operation Dudula was trying to stop people from Zimbabwe. I heard a terrible story about a Zimbabwean mother have to give birth to herself. Mm-hmm. She kept giving birth to herself in a South African hospital, and the nurses just helped her clean herself up. It's sickening. It's a disgrace in this country, but that is working class. It's poor people of color kicking out other poor people of color. They're not going to Sandton Clinic. They're not going to Christie and Barnard there in the foreshore, which is clear product of apartheid. They're going after other poor black people, and instead of targeting one where the source of this inequality is. How do we get people to get around that?
Yeah, well, we need to, like, start voting in people who are not telling us that they're going to be doing this kind of divisive politicking, like going into hospitals and saying, you need to leave. I think the Patriotic Alliance did this, going into hospitals saying, anyone who's not a South African needs to leave this hospital now.
Yeah.
But, like, those kinds of things are unconstitutional, and they're not who we are as South Africans. And to go back to history, these are colonial borders of, like, okay, you're a Zimbabwean, I'm a South African. But these are arbitrary lines drawn up by European powers. And so by enacting out this kind of prejudice against fellow Africans, we're just reinforcing those. It comes back to white supremacy. Again, it's like letting people fight for the scraps that they have, right? Instead of thinking about, well, why, you know, like, and Patriotic Alliance will say, like, we don't have the resources for everyone or whatever. You know, that would be the counter argument.
And action, like, is aim, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, why? Why don't we? Why can't we? You know, we're a rich country, rich in natural resources. We've got so much, like, you know, where's all the money going?
We know where it's going into Ramaphosa's couch. listen, man, you know, some black people are still acting like colored people are less than, as you say. It's because of this idea that of racial purity that comes from whiteness. One, white supremacy is an imaginary idea called white. Like, being black is, like, black is Fanta and colored people is Oros. How do we break that ridiculous idea down? How do we explain the idea to kids? Because it's not reaching them. If the open chats, whatever podcast doesn't know it, then your average kid on the street doesn't know it either. And I'll tell you one thing, if you try to get Helen Ziller or any of those guys to get the Department of Education to include this, tell you, oh, no, you're being woke. You're woke. That's what you know. We're just trying to teach kids not be racist. Or anyone, not just kids, Gayton included.
Yeah. Well, I think with kids, we've got to tell them, like, firstly, like, two things can be true at the same time. Like, you don't have to think, like, this, you know, like, this person is like that, therefore they're only like that. But, like, this person could be black, but they could also be colored, or they could have a colored grandmother, and they could have, you know what I mean? So this,
yeah.
And these are the realities. Like, so we need to teach kids that there's no such thing as racial purity, actually. There's no, like, pure race. That race was just an idea that people came up with. Yes, like, physical appearances are real, like, you know, and that has genetic differences, but those are just, like, literally, like, skin deep, like the ways in which we look. But in terms of us as human beings, there's so little difference. I think it was like a 0.1 difference in terms of how people look, how that affects your DNA and that kind of thing. So, like, we need to start with that, but also be honest about what happened in history. Why do we have these structural inequalities? Why does why are there no black people living in Camps Bay, for example? You know what I mean? So it's like...
No, well, there are black people in Camps Bay, and they all have the name Kayadlanga. Wow, our camera guy just left. That's how professional we are. Yeah, Futsak, leave. One less white guy in the room. Okay, let's...
No, we got this. We can do this.
We're filming on our own now. Yeah. We're in the deep end. In Cape Town, you get a guy called a Gachi. He's the guy who gets people onto the taxis. And he sits there running, you know, at the door. You know that. But people outside of Cape Town, you won't know that. And often the Gachi's got a working class guy and often is a colored guy. And some of them have a particular accent that some would associate as kind of like a stereotype. So one of many accents that you hear people of color and colored people use. But, you know, you've never met a CEO who sounds like a Gachi. Well, I don't know of one. And even though the CEO of SAA or SAF Air should be a Gachi, because if they did, that airplane would always be full. So we have this hierarchy that's created by accent where certain people are seen as less competent or capable. Mm-hmm. And my favorite quote comes from Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, said, "The problem with stereotypes is not that they are not true, it's that they're incomplete." Mm-hmm. And those incomplete stereotypes affect people's life chances.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly why you don't get kids who sound like a Gachi basically working their way up the corporate ladder, is because that accent has a connotation with incompetence, which is also like totally bullshit, right? Like it's completely
lies, rubbish. Yeah.
This is also why, like, when I was growing up, my parents sent me to, you know, white schools, which had just been desegregated in the 90s, and why I sound kind of like how I do today, because like that's how I was socially, you know, acclimatized to like a world that expected me to sound a certain way if I wanted to succeed. And that's also why a lot of colored people, even you could even talk about some sense of like a colored privilege, or like because some of us were able to do that as like a first language being English, for example. Even though my parents were Afrikaans, they like pushed that aside and were like, you know, we're gonna just do English now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a whole other can of worms, that one. Yeah.
Insane. Thank you very much, Dylan Valley. You were absolutely brilliant. Thanks for coming to the podcast. We don't even have a camera guy, so we're just gonna end this on our own.
Okay, cool. So how do we end it without the camera?
I don't know. Let's hug. Let's hug.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Smells like colored privilege to me. No, thanks, Dylan. Yeah. It was great. Make sure. Thanks. Yeah, that's nice. Please make sure that you like, subscribe, comment. Let us know you want next. What an important conversation this was. Halala, that was real problem with Chester missing. Okay, bye. Okay, you can go now.
Okay.
I'm going to turn it off myself.
Okay.
It was great having you here.
See you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye. That's what we do. We kick people off set. Okay, bye. Brilliant. Thanks, Brit. It's fucking weird. Granted to run away.
That was cool. You should definitely keep that in.